Erin Carlson, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
So this new book marries two of my favorite topics, baseball and movies. And baseball movies automatically propel to the top of the list, and A League of Their Own is one of my all-time favorites. So the first question I have is, what brought you to this topic? I imagine when the movie came out in the early 90s, you were a young girl, and I wonder if when did you discover this movie?
I'm an elder millennial, as we say. So I remember life before the internet, and when everybody saw one movie in the theater, everyone saw the same movie in the theater. So my friends and I went to go see A League of Their Own. I was in 6th or 7th grade. I was 11 years old. I was not athletic. My father is an extremely good baseball player. His nickname is Babe after Babe Ruth. He did not pass that on to me. I'm more artistically inclined, but I had a lot of friends in school who were very sporty. And so we went to go see the movie, and I immediately connected to it. The female friendship and camaraderie, the victory song. That they sing in the locker room that I then sang with my friends at recess. And just the fact that these girl ball players were funny and loud and annoying and shown to be really, really, really good at baseball. Like all of the things that my friends were in real life, little girls weren't often seen on the big screen being. So it was just refreshing, but it was also a really funny movie. Yes, it's a history lesson. Oh my gosh, nobody knew this league existed until this movie, but it had great comic performances, especially by Tom Hanks. I mean, Tom Hanks as Jimmy Dugan stole so many scenes. And he reminded me of, like, because my brother was in Little League. My brother's an excellent athlete. And so I grew up going to a lot of those games, and Jimmy Dugan, when he's yelling, "There's no grind in baseball," he reminded me of like a little league coach, like an 80s dad who was just so invested, a little too invested in the game, perhaps. So he just took that comic bit and ran with it. And of course, No Crying in Baseball, that was a no-brainer to title this book. It had so much of what I look for. Of course, I love the stories behind the scenes of the making of this movie. For me, just had a lot going for it. You had an irreverent director in Penny Marshall, a cast of big, boisterous personalities, Hanks, and also Madonna. And this movie is beloved, and for good reason. It's the rare film, and still is the rare film to show girls playing all female team sport, and not just any sport, the sport of baseball, a sport that men have generally played. So the movie was a revelation for its time, and it just continues to stand out because it's a really good movie, and it's also on TV all the time. Somewhere right now it is playing on cable television. Somewhere right now you have groups of girls deciding what to be for Halloween, and they're going to be Rock for Peaches. It lives
One of
on.
the things, excuse me, pardon. I know it's one of my poppy seed movies, as they call them. I'll watch it whenever it's on. You consider a lot of things in the movie. There's an awful lot about Penny Marshall, the director in here, her background, her upbringing, her. I'm not going to get into the psychology of her personality, but. There's so many elements of this book. There's her personally. There's the battle between any director and the studios and on the one hand and the actors on the other hand trying to get their vision across. There's also the actors involved and their insecurities about can they do this role? What are they going to look like? That was one of the things I found toward the end of the book, where the character who played Marla attended the premiere pregnant, and she was like amazed at what she saw. Some are going to be very happy with the final product. Some are not. Some are going to be disappointed that they didn't get more screen time. There's certainly a lot of personality conflicts in here. Like you mentioned Madonna and how a huge star like that managed to mix in with everybody else or not mix in anybody else, depending on the other actors and technical staff's points of view. What was the biggest surprise you had when researching this book?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there were many surprises. And so this, there were many surprises that I can't report that I was not able to confirm that are more salacious. But there are some surprises that are just charming that I felt comfortable including in the book, but my jaw literally dropped to the floor when I heard them. And that for me, and this might sound trite or cute, but it just warmed my heart and made me giggle. Tom Hanks had an anonymous gossip column on set called Peach Fuzz, Fuzz with a PH. It would arrive every Friday on Xeroxed copies, on Xeroxed paper. And it would just have like, cute, funny, observations, who was canoodling with whom, because there was a lot going, of that going on set. But it was fairly benign gossip. And toward the end of filming, it was discovered that it was Tom Hanks behind it. He had this playful sensibility and this lightness that just kept a lot of spirits alive during the filming of that movie, because the filming was for a lot of people torture. They were shooting in Indiana, in the Midwest, in 100-degree temperatures, sweat pouring down their backs, makeup smeared, and there was a lot of hurry up and wait, because this was a baseball movie, yes, but it was more, people described it to me as like a war movie. It was as big and sprawling as any war movie made. And the peaches, the Rockford peaches, were just props that talked, one of them told me. They often would sit in their trailers for long 10-hour days and not be used. They were often shooting baseball vignettes, and action shots, and they weren't sure how it would all be pieced together. But there was a thread in Penny's head that only she could see, and she was an amazing editor, and she kind of cobbled everything together so that it looked like a movie. So when Gina Davis saw it, she was shocked, because nobody, Marla Hooch, the actress who played her, is named Megan Cavanaugh, a Chicago girl. She thought it was going straight to video. Nobody knew, right? Nobody knew that this movie would resonate as it has, for sure. But it's the most successful baseball movie of all time. Even more successful than other movies I love, like Field of Dreams, The Natural, and Bull Durham. So that's unusual that this movie made more money than those movies, which also endure as classics. But you know what I mean? It seems like a miracle almost.
You talk about the long days of basically not doing anything, and I recall from your book that Penny Marshall shot a million feet of film. Now, I'm not versed in the industry, so I don't know how that stacks up against other films of similar length. It seems like a lot, and it seems like it would take a lot of. You say she was a very good editor. But she's not dealing with it on her own, and there were conflicts between Penny Marshall and other people, other creative types, directors of photography, writers, editors. I recall a part in the book where the male writers were having a tough time writing humor for women, and I wonder about that dynamic there, that gender dynamic between a female director and the majority of the rest of the creative staff who were male. And what was that like?
Oh, well, so the writers, Babalu Mandel, that's his name, and Lowell Ganz, they were an iconic comedy screenwriting duo. They wrote Splash, and then Parenthood, and they are just they wrote together like Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld do. Like when they wrote Seinfeld, they just sit across from each other and make jokes and make each other laugh. And that's how they wrote the No Crime in Baseball scene. You know, they were like writing it freestyle, just like writing it on a piece of paper and yelling back at each other. So it's funny. So Geena Davis played the very stoic, like she was like a athletic superhero. Dottie Hinson, the best player on the Rockford Peaches, but she's like an athlete, you know. She's taciturn, she's self-possessed, and she's a strong and silent type. But Gina wanted more jokes. She saw that the other characters got to be funny, and a lot of them were women. Rosie O'Donnell was hilarious in that movie. Madonna was funny in that movie. Marla Hooch, oh my God, that her rendition of It Had to Be You is one of the iconic covers of that song ever. So the writers could write women. They really could. And of course, Lovett's got a lot of jokes. And Tom Hanks, because they could improvise, and Penny loved improvisers. But Gina wanted a little of that too. So she goes to Gans and Mandel. She's like, can you write some jokes for me? And they go, it's her recollection, you know, it's pretty hard to write jokes for women. And she's like, come on, guys, pretend I'm like Billy Crystal. And they wrote jokes for Billy Crystal too. She's like, just pretend I'm Billy Crystal and write me a joke. And I think they had a different understanding of what Dottie was. You know, Dottie was not the jokester. She was the straight man. She was the calm amid this, you know, in the center of the storm. So Gina actually took that and ran with it. She's like, okay, I'm going to be as stoic as possible. I'm going to be the Gary Cooper of this movie and just, you know, be the center of the storm. And I think it worked for her. She came late to the movie. She replaced Deborah Winger last minute in the role. So Gina had missed weeks of rehearsals. She did not have the training that a lot of her co-stars had. So she had to start from scratch, and she had no understanding of baseball, as Tom Hanks told the coach on the movie. She doesn't even know that she has to take off her catcher's mitt, you know, or catcher's mask. So she was at a disadvantage there. However, she was smart enough to know what she could do and couldn't do. Whereas like Lori Petty and some other of her co-stars were like, I don't want to use my double. I want to do the stunt myself. Gina was more than happy to cede her stunt work to her doubles, who were both men and women. However, she got it. She's a quick learner and she's extremely smart. So she began to master certain things, you know, as filming went on. She figured out how to catch a pop fly behind her back. And she was just very, very good at projecting excellence. She was very, very good at persuading people that she was the on screen, that she was the best player in the league. She had a fierce batting stance and a steely game face. Gina called her, Gina, Rosie O'Donnell called her Gina the Machina, and that Terminator quality. You see it in that scene where Rosie's character, you know, throws at her, and then Gina catches the ball with her bare hand. And like, whoa, that scene makes you go, she's a badass. But that ball in real life was made of Nerf. That was a foam ball thrown at Gina from a short distance off camera, but you would never know that it was anything less than a hard ball.
Because it
That's how good of an.
certainly sounds like it was
Yeah.
a hand. One of my
Oh yeah,
favorite,
that's looping. That's post-production. That
sure.
crack, that
One
snap.
of my
Yeah.
favorite scenes in the movie is when they drive up to the suds bucket. There's a little, like a tween boy driving the car, and he says, "Why don't we go in the back seat and you make a man out of me?" And she says, "Why don't I smack you around?" He says, "Can't we do both?" I thought that was my favorite line in the whole movie. She was very convincing as an athlete. Many of the women were convincing, and then some were athletes, some were athletic, some were players. Some of the things, not so much, but I don't want to get into that so much. A good deal about the movie does not address the sexual component of the day of the league. And I wonder if in years later, Penny Marshall ever had any second thoughts about not addressing the gay parts of the league, as certainly I believe it's Amazon, or it might be another streaming service, their version of A League of Their Own, which I did not like at all, I must say, does address that much, much more. But then again, this was 1992 versus 2023. So I wonder if you have any thoughts about her addressing that.
Well, Penny is just one to own all of her choices. Penny, as anxious as she could, and indecisive, and just she was just so full of angst and worry. But she owned her choices and she defended them, and she wasn't really into regretting some choices that she made that might not age as well. One of those was the original players of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. A large number of them were gay, but that history, the lesbian history, was just erased from the film. And, that was illuminated during the scene that Rosie O'Donnell filmed on the Rockford Peaches bus. And she's explaining to her teammates why she's kept dating her deadbeat boyfriend, because she's like, because I everyone else made me feel like the weird girl because I could play ball. But she's looking right at her teammates, and for the first time in her life, she's among like-minded people. She feels a sense of belonging, a sense of community, and she goes, we're all right. And she rips up his photo and throws it out the window. Betty Spaghetti and Kit are nodding in agreement. For Rosie, that scene had a lot of subtext. Rosie felt that her character was gay, totally in love with May, all the way May, more libido, but didn't really know what to do about that, and didn't know that those feelings meant that she was gay. So she was reciting the monologue that Gans and Mandel wrote, and all of a sudden Penny goes, "Row." Ro, what are you doing? And Rosie's like, what do you mean? She's like, Rosie, it's not a gay thing. Don't make it a gay thing. That's my Penny impression. That's very bad. And but Rosie, who was gay, understood this character as Penny could not, and recited the lines the same way as she recited them before. And a lot of lesbians and queer film goers saw the subtext in that too. And for them, that was Doris's coming out moment. That was when she came out. Maybe she didn't say it out loud, but that's what they felt. That moment flew over my head, as did a lot of moments in that film, that it's a queer film for queer audiences. It's not stated, but it kind of hangs in the air. So my take on why Penny didn't acknowledge that history is kind of twofold. I think she was so obsessed with the box office of her films, and I think she felt that acknowledging that history could possibly damage ticket sales. And she was a Marshall, like her brother Gary. She wanted to make a film as big and broad and as commercial as possible, and it was thought that centering gay characters would make it niche, so that was the thinking at the time. So I also, one of the peaches, Megan Kavanaugh, who played Marla Hooch, told me, Penny wasn't gay. I don't think she understood the importance of telling those stories because it didn't affect her in a way. I think that's just, that's just my take on that. So when Abby Jacobson went to go reboot A League of Their Own for Amazon, she called Penny to receive her blessing, and she did. And Penny was very sick at the time, so the phone call was like 20 minutes. But Penny explained to Abby that she didn't have time during the runtime. I think it was like 2 hours. She didn't have enough time to tell those stories, but she did include that great scene of the black player, picking up that ball in a foul line and throwing it over Dottie's head. So Penny was very proud of that moment.
And that
But if she
moment
were ma
is.
right, but if she were making this movie today, she would absolutely acknowledge the lesbian history for sure.
The moment with the African American woman throwing the ball is a big component of the television version,
Yeah.
quite a bit. I want to go back to something you said about when Geena Davis came on. She was a little behind because Deborah Winger was originally cast in the role. And I always think about what movies would be like if they had different people in those roles. And were there
Yeah.
other people who were considered for some, like, was there anybody else considered for the role of Jimmy Dugan?
Oh, yes. I love those stories too. Like, how would the movie be different if this person were in this iconic role? Or I can't imagine anyone else playing this role. But then you can sometimes if you hear of some people who are up for it.
I couldn't
Jim
imagine
DeLuca.
anybody else playing Marla Hooch.
Right? I mean, she's perfect. That's my favorite Peach. That's my favorite, and she's a lovely person too. Jim Belushi was up for the role of Jimmy Dugan, and I think he would have made an excellent Jimmy. He has that look of an athlete aging, kind of past his prime, but he has that boyish handsomeness and that charm and that Midwesternness that I think would fit that character. But it was between him and Hanks. So Jim Belushi told me, I had the role on a Friday, then they gave it to Tom Hanks on a Monday. So and a crew member told me that Belushi wanted to work out, while making, on set. So he had his gym bag sent to the set in Chicago from LA. So his bag was sitting there, his gym bag was sitting there, and they were all waiting for Jim Belushi to show up. But no, it was Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks took the role and ran with it.
And I can't imagine anybody else doing that role. And he was pretty convincing too. There's a scene where he's hitting against a pitching machine, and the special effects seemed decent for the time. One of the things I didn't like about the TV version was the special effects were actually terrible.
Yeah, I've heard that.
They were using CGI for some of the things, and you could tell by the way the players were swinging the bat that they weren't actually doing anything to switch back. The actual women from the All-American Girls League, how did they feel about the movie? And considering that a good portion of them were gay, were they disappointed that that wasn't included in the movie, or did they understand because of the times that it couldn't be?
I can't speak to their disappointment, but I think they accepted it. I'm thinking that they accepted it because a lot of these women were not they had partners, but they weren't out. So they had roommates, they had best friends that they lived with, but they didn't put a label on anything publicly. So I think they understood. They were more upset about a couple of things. I mean, they love the movie and they're very honored by it. It's part of their legacy, and so many more people knew about the league, this obscure women's baseball league erased from the history books. So many people knew what they did and knew that they were trailblazers. So they love that acknowledgement. They didn't like some of the creative license that the writers took. So the writers made Jimmy Dugan at the beginning a total buffoon. And the players were like, that's not how our managers were. Some of their managers were checked out former major leaguers like Jimmy Fox, who was, partly in part inspiration for Jimmy Dugan. But those guys were always polite. They showed up, and they weren't gross or crude, so they were like, that's not right. And they also didn't like a scene that Penny later cut because they didn't like it. And it was with Jimmy kissing Dottie. So they have a moment, it's dark, the game has ended, and they're talking, and he's like, just raving to Dottie. He's like, you're so good. You're like an animal. He's just telling her that she's amazing at baseball, which she is. And then, like, his passion, gets a hold of him, and he grabs her, pulls her in for a kiss, and she's like, why did you do that? And runs away. And the studio had wanted some of that rom they wanted a romantic scene between the two of them, and they wanted Dottie to end up with Jimmy at the end of the movie. But Penny put her foot down. She's like, no. This takes the focus away from the central storyline, Dottie, Kit, like the women of the league, the Rockford Peaches. And the original players were like, first of all, Dottie would never betray her husband like that. Dottie would never let that happen. Her husband's off at war. And the original players, they didn't think of themselves as feminist trailblazers until later. They thought of themselves as at the front lines of the war, keeping baseball alive at a time when a lot of the minor leaguers were overseas. So they thought of it as their patriotic duty. Not until the 1980s did they start reuniting and, like, petitioning to Cooperstown for them to create a display in their honor.
For those who are interested, I believe you can find that deleted scene on YouTube. I saw it several years ago, and it was a good decision not to do something like that.
Right. And
Oh.
Tom Hanks felt it was a good decision too. He liked the suggestion of affection and kind of romantic t tension. He thought that worked better than the execution of
Talk a
it.
little bit about the reviews, because from where I sit, some of the reviews you included from the male reviewers seemed a bit more harsh than the female reviewers. And I always wonder when I read a review if, how much the person knows, how much they need to know about the topic, especially something based on reality. For them to, I mean, does having too much baseball knowledge help or hurt? But talk about that perception a little bit.
Right. I think there's some movies I love that got, the reviews were begrudging at the time. My all-time favorite film. This might not be for your audience, but maybe it might be. You've Got Mail. It's my favorite, actually my favorite Tom Hanks movie, and then A League of Their Own would be second. That movie got begrudging reviews, middling reviews. But it has stood the test of time, and now it's beloved. Same with A League of Their Own. I think, look, they're playing movie baseball. A lot of these actresses, like Madonna, were chosen because they could get butts in seats in the theater. But they were trainable, at least. Penny required that they have a modicum of athletic ability. They could grow perhaps as athletes during the filming. And project athletic ability. But yeah, a lot of the critics just gave these negative reviews. Negative reviews that I think were harsher than the reviews that were given to the Kevin Costner baseball movies. And I think a lot of that had to do, and this is a feminist term. Apologies for using it, but it must be said, a lot of internalized misogyny. Women are just held to a higher standard, and if you're going to be an actress who plays baseball, you're going to be held to a higher standard because most actresses don't play baseball. But I think the movie, also comedies are not as re well reviewed as dramas. They're just comedies are never given their due. And they become more iconic over time, definitely more iconic than Penny's drama Awakenings, which was nominated for an Oscar. But yeah, this movie is beloved 30 years later by men and women, boys and girls. It transcends generations. It's passed down like an heirloom. Little girls are still dressing as Rockford Peaches. So who has the last laugh? It's Penny Marshall. It's Penny Marshall has the last laugh.
And we've been talking with Erin Carlson, author of No Crying in Baseball, The Inside Story of a League of Their Own, Big Stars, Dugout Drama, and a Home Run for Hollywood. Erin, thank you very much for talking with us today,
Thank
and good
you.
luck as you promote the book.
Thank you so much. And thanks for your time and inviting me on.